great parameters, I'm getting off the chart values. Like, the throughput is way too high.
Because if the data is not found, if it's off the chart, it means you're not actually going to the flash and getting the data.
This is bio, remember? These are read numbers for the bio tool. No file system, just reading from the flash device.
Okay, so the thing that I think about is, even if it's bio, you do a random write and do a random read, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're doing a read of data that has not been written before, it's going to be super fast.
Yeah.
So you need to actually read data that has been written to. So that is the catch. That's why it's super fast.
I see.
Because if it doesn't, basically if there's no mapping, we just simply populate all everything as zero and return it back, it's extremely fast.
Okay. So I just need to write garbage on the device and then read from that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or what you can do is you have to make sure that you only write it, read from the device to which it has been written. There is some bitmaps that the FIO utility uses to may know what data it wrote, so that when it reads from the written locations. I forgot what it is. I'll try to find out that option and send it to you, email it to you.
Okay. Yeah, that would be great because FIO tool is great, but it's kind of tricky to configure.
Okay.
So once I have that,
to talk to the other person and try to get the benchmark that they use to run the FIO.
Okay. So once I have that, I can update the figure and we could potentially, once we all agree that the figure makes sense, we can add it to the paper. That might require changing a little bit the description of the figure. But I think this new version of the figure would be closer to what we had originally before we changed it, in which the rights for number of tandem QV were very close to those of FIO. And there's still one case in which level DB, I believe for one set of level DB is outperforming in FIO or write. But I think it's because of the asynchronous write that it's just right into the buffer.
Did you see that again?
I think that there's still one case in which level DB is outperforming FIO. But I think that is for the asynchronous. I have to check. Unfortunately, I don't have access to the data that right now, so I cannot say for sure, but I will see that once I update the figure.
Oh, level DB is outperforming FIO, okay.
Yes.
because they actually are right by caching. Is it because of caching, or?
I believe that is the case. I don't have the numbers here with me. But once I update the figure, I plan to do that this afternoon.
Okay.
Well, I have to run the FIO tool first. So as soon as I get the parameters, I will run it. But I already have the numbers for write.
Okay.
That's basically my update. The new numbers for figure 4.
Okay.
What else is on the agenda for today?
So Nisha, I think, has a bunch of things. One of the things that she wanted to do, which I can quickly tell you, it's a very minor thing, either you or I can do it, it's not a big deal, is changing the first author, this thing. So there is star missing under your name that says work done at Fusion.io. I'm not sure if it's true anymore. But she wanted to do that, so we can talk about it.
Oh, I thought that was an error. Sorry, I was the one who removed it. it doesn't matter to me. Leo did quite a bit of this work at FIU. It doesn't matter to me.
Yeah, also, exactly. It doesn't matter to me, too. Give me one second here. So, yeah, I don't really care about it.
I thought it was maybe leftover of some previous submission which Leo did while he was at Fusion.
I didn't even notice this until Nisha mentioned it.
And I was the one who removed it, thinking that it was incorrect.
Okay, Nisha is back now.
Hi, Ayu.
Hi, Nisha.
Hey, I got the pen on the paper. So give me a few hours to work on it. I don't know if you guys already talked about this, but Raju, I was kind of assuming Leo was going to present the paper. Am I thinking wrong?
No, you're not. That's
okay,
my understanding too. But let's ask Leo that he's okay with that. I'm assuming Leo, you okay with it?
Yeah.
Okay. I want to make sure because I got an email today, you know, somewhere saying, you know, congratulations for.
You got a discount of $50.
Yeah. So I figured, you know, I just want to make confirm that, you know, Leo is in fact going.
Yeah. Leo will. Present as far as I am concerned. So Swami, Nisha, we were just talking earlier. I was the one who removed the star because attached to Leo's name, saying that it was work done at Fusion.io. I thought it was leftover of some previous submission that was done while Leo was working at Fusion.io. So I removed it. But if you want to put it back, that's fine. What I was thinking was, So Leo did quite a bit of the work at Fusion, and then he continued and did work at FIU as well. So I thought the star should be removed, but it's okay either way with me.
I don't have a strong feeling about it, Roger, so whatever you prefer is fine. It's just something I noticed while I was doing my task, so that's what I passed along.
I was the one who removed it, just for clarification.
So the other minor thing that we could do basically is move Fusion.io at the beginning and then work at the Fusion.io at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the other thing that you suggested?
Yeah, right? So I suggest Fusion.io first, Florida second, work on the Fusion third.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
That's all, yeah. So let's leave Leo's affiliation just uniquely to FIU.
Yeah.
And
okay, this is a minor question for Nisha. Shushma and Sriram also no longer with Fusion.io, so do you want to say star?
We should say star.
Put star and work done at Fusion.io. Okay.
Oh, wow. So they all left? All three of them?
So they all left at different times.
Uh-huh.
For different, what's his name?
Bharat
went back to school.
Yeah.
He's doing his PhD at Stanford.
Yeah, and then the other two actually moved to different companies over the span of like 6 or 8 months.
Uh-huh. So, okay. Interesting. Okay. Right. So, what should we talk about today besides the new data that you had? I think I had the comment about the metadata requirement. It's still not clear to me what is the overhead. It's I saw the emails from Nisha and you, Swami. I'm trying to figure out what should we write as the metadata overhead.
So I think there are two things, Raju.
Yeah.
So there's flash-based metadata overhead.
Yeah.
Which is the amount of, which is comprised of two things. The amount of extra flash capacity we consume by putting metadata above the KV pair, and more importantly, the amount of flash capacity we consume in wasted space in certain cases because we can only index a sector. So the 150 bytes that Swami was referring to is the latter, and it is flash metadata consumption, not DRAM. Then the DRAM consumption of the FTL that goes up because it's sparse is basically, we've done some experiments internally and noticed that it's not very substantial, but I think we don't have enough space in the paper, plus that would be a whole other addition to the paper to cover that in any kind of depth. So what I was suggesting was, if I remember right, the flash tier paper had their own design of sparse where they created a sparse map. And they had a pretty nice evaluation of the cost of that. So maybe we reference that and say people have done sparse maps before, they've done analysis of their overheads and then refer to the Flash Tier paper for that.
Okay. So that answers one of the questions about, well, what does it perhaps take to implement a sparse map, right? Because
yes.
I think we may not even talk about what it takes to implement it in this paper. I don't think we do in any detail.
And we don't, and that's why referencing the Flash Tier might be good because it's covered in great depth.
Yeah.
In a reference publication. So even more reason we should not be doing it.
Okay. And then the other question about how much metadata does our implementation of sparse map consume? I think that's an independent question to the previous one. I think there we would probably need to answer something or provide an answer. And that's where the 150 bytes comes in.
No. So the 150 bytes is actually Flash consumption. And has nothing to do with the sparse map.
So I would try to say it slightly differently. For NVMKV to correctly identify and validate the key value pair, you need to store some metadata. If you think about it, the key is 128 bytes. You're actually mapping into a 48-bit address space. It means you're going to lose some information. In order to correctly know that it is the right key, you have to store the actual key onto the flash itself. That is the metadata that we're talking about, 150 bytes. The 128-bit is the actual key, then you have the pool ID and all those things you actually put in because you want to hash things into it.
Right.
So that's the metadata, this thing. So sparse is a totally different aspect.
So hold on, Swami. Are you saying that the key itself is part of the metadata? I wouldn't think that is the case. Because the key would need to be stored in, it's like data from the flash's standpoint, right? Or even the KV store standpoint. I wouldn't think of the key as metadata.
Okay,
every file system would need to store the name of the file somewhere, and I wouldn't think of it as overhead. It is metadata, but it's not overhead. I think what the reviewer is trying to ask is what is the overhead, space overhead of the NVM KV store, storing stuff that you absolutely don't need to store, right? Or you could potentially not store.
In that case, it is probably zero.
I see.
Well, we do have some space to store metadata for the person.
But that's not... Sorry, go ahead, Leo.
I remember to see that it is also possible to store metadata associated to the key value pair.
Like what?
Whatever you wanna pair with the key value pair.
No, but according to what Raju mentioned, that's possibly data that's not overheads.
No. If I understood correctly, it is you are counting as part of the metadata for the key value pair the size of the key. And the argument is that shouldn't be considered metadata because it's part of the data. Besides, you need that to solve collisions.
Yeah.
To verify that you're actually fetching the right key value pair.
Correct. Okay.
But besides the key and the value, you could potentially add metadata to the key value pair. That's correct, right? The API supports that.
Okay.
Yeah, but hold on, that's optional. I think we are talking about required overhead. Let me go back to the comment. I shouldn't be pointing us in the wrong direction. Let me hold on a second. I want to look at the specific comment to understand what is being asked. Okay. trying to see. Okay, it's not in the first review. Let's see if it's in the second one.
I think it's the second review.
What are the costs of the additional metadata required to implement a sparse map in the FTM?
Yeah, so this comes down to what I was saying, which is what he's asking is what is the overhead of sparse?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and how does that compare to not having it?
Right.
And that's why my point was that since Flashtier actually built a sparse map. Swami, can you really quickly bring up the Flashtier paper and make sure that I'm not remembering this wrong? It's been a while since I read it.
Nisha, do you think it's more convenient to point to the Flashtier paper as opposed to provide some general statistics about the overhead?
Yeah, that's kind of where I was going because for two reasons, Leo, first of all, well, three reasons. First of all, we don't have space to add those stats. The stats are a little bit more sensitive to the internals of Fusion, so I'm not entirely comfortable putting them on here. And plus, you know, we don't have time to necessarily regenerate them. So, you know, the sparse map doesn't have to be identical to the one we built. It could be pretty much exactly like the one the Flashtier guys built. What KV relies on is the sparseness, not the particular architecture of the map. So I was kind of hoping you could kill sort of two birds with one stone and say, look, there's a nice detailed write-up in another publication that shows the viability of the technique.
Right.
Okay, that's good. That's good, because even if we don't have such a well-articulated answer on the paper, at least we can address that in the actual presentation if the question does come up.
Yeah, so there is one more question in the third review. It says, in figure 3 you mentioned that additional metadata is stored with KV pair to resolve collisions. How much additional metadata? So I think we have to maybe clarify whatever we are saying related to figure 3 as well.
Okay, let's take a look at figure 3. Yeah, so I think this is where, you know, make it very clear the difference between metadata stored on the flash medium versus things kept in memory, right? So the sparse question, for example, is a memory consumption question, whereas metadata stored with the key value pair is a flash consumption question.
Okay.
So for example, the metadata header of the KV pair has the length, you know, the key, what else is kept?
The pool ID. And the time expiry.
And the expiry time. So if you exclude the key, then the metadata overhead on flash is the pool ID, the expiry time, and the length.
Yeah.
That's it.
Even length is not needed. Because you already have the mapping in this thing, right? We'll have a contiguous, the range iteration will give us the length, but the other thing will also store the length. Yeah. But if you think about it, most key values don't store the length also in it, so it's not an overhead. So that's a tricky question, a tricky point actually. Raju brings a nice point where these things are metadata, not overhead, so I don't know.
So maybe we just need to, I don't want to create a massive revamp of the paper over this.
Yeah.
Can we just call it in-memory? Arjun, do you think we would confuse the reader too much if we use the word metadata to merely mean additional things we store in flash and we address the sparse question just as the sparse question?
Yeah, I think that the reader, I mean, metadata already has a few connotations in the literature, right? So,
yes.
Some of the metadata is not considered overhead. For instance, in file systems, file name and all of that is not considered overhead. But it's required metadata. I think the reviewer's question is more along the lines of, do you need additional space to implement sparse map? And I think we have to be, let's say we decide to point to the Flashtier work, we have to at least give some indication or at least say that, for instance, if you, in the Flashtier the FlashTier sparse map uses additional metadata in additional, sorry, not metadata, additional overhead of such and such in memory and maybe zero on flash, right? I think if we state that, then it would be clear enough. Because it seems like more than one reviewer had this question in their mind as they were reading their paper. So it is only likely that if we don't address this completely, there will be future readers who will have similar questions.
Yeah, and I think it's a very fair question also. So what does the FlashTier paper say, Tommy?
Basically, they talk about using the sparse hash map that Google did. They use the same one to emulate it, and all of them is kept in memory. And they just, that's what they say. They don't talk about how they write it and what the storage that needed and stuff.
Forget the storage. They talk about the memory.
They don't talk about memory. At least I
haven't. What they did. Yes, memory consumption, page. This thing doesn't have pages, but it's section 6.2.
Okay, I haven't come to that yet.
Okay, table 4.
Evaluation, okay. 6.1.
Yeah, there you go.
Memory consumption, yeah. Workload, SSD, SSD. It doesn't talk about the spark, it just talks about how much is used actually. So for the workload, how much is used in each of them is what is mentioned.
Okay, so read the text. The text is in section 6.2. It says table 4 compares the memory usage on the device for the native file system and FlashTier. Overall, FlashTier with the SSD, the solid state cache, consumes 11% more disk. Device memory, and with SSDR, consumes 160% more. However, both FlashTier, okay, what is device memory relative to host memory?
Oh, really?
That's from Isaac.
Thank you. Hi, Isaac. I'm sorry, I'm in a meeting, but...
No, that's fine. We were waiting for you to finish, but I decided just to go ahead and give it to you right away.
No problem. Thank you so much.
Actually, 6.3 talks about more about this thing. So they say that for some workloads they have tried, the sparse only increases by 5 to 17% more memory. They say they use 22 bytes for block, for a disk block too. So that's the overhead they talk about for sparse, 22 bytes. But in Jiffy, it's the same for the native system also. It's not like they add overheads for making it sparse.
Sorry?
So in 6.3, they do a little bit more detailed evaluation.
Okay.
So in which they actually say that because of sparseness, they add 5 to 17% more host memory, consume more memory.
Remind me again, when they say host memory versus device memory, what are they talking about? Because we need to make the connection between that taxonomy and ours in order to draw a conclusion.
Yeah. So
what's device memory?
Device memory is whatever is, at least my understanding is whatever is stored inside the device. Let me search for the exact terminology.
That's the cache, I think. The flash cache. I think they're building a caching system, right?
Yeah.
So...
Okay.
So the amount, it includes all the size, the total size of cache data for the, you know, how much is being cached in DRAM and how much is being cached in the flash cache. I think that's what they're...
So I don't think there's a DRAM cache in this paper, Raju.
Oh, they're not.
Could be wrong.
Hmm.
Yeah. So if you look at the very edge of the introduction, okay? Just look at the three bullet points at the very bottom of the introduction. This is on page 2.
Yeah.
This is where they're talking about total memory usage. So the point they're making is that the DRAM consumption of the caching software plus the memory consumption of the SSD together is 60% less when they converted the SSD to use a sparse map, thereby increasing its memory consumption, but then leverage the sparse map in the cache, thereby decreasing the cache's memory consumption. So the point that they're making, which is the same point we've observed in the KV, is that you increase the memory consumption at the FTL level by some amount, but that increase is far smaller than the decrease that occurs in the application. So therefore, the total goes down.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so that's the point they're making, which is, you know, the total is going down,
yeah,
but the device, it goes up.
Yeah. I don't see how that is related to the sparse map memory consumption. I think, I mean, if you look at the caption on under the table 4, it says memory consumption, total size of cached data, and host and device memory usage for native and flash 3-year systems.
Yes, so I think column 1 is the total size of the data that is being cached on the flash device, which is measured in gigabytes, from 1.6 gigabytes in the home workload to 205 gigabytes in the Project 50 workload. The flash device, without the sparse map, is consuming 1.13 megabytes in the home workload for its indirection, for its FTL map. It's consuming 1.33 megabytes for the sparse map that's being used in the SSC. And then SSCR, which is a different kind of sparse map, is using 3.07 megabytes. Whereas the cache that was built on top of the block device SSD, which is called native, is using 8.8 megabytes to index that 1.6 gigabytes of cache data.
I see.
And then the FTCM, which is optimized for the sparse-based FTL, is using less than 1 megabyte to index the same 1.6 gigs of cache data. So depending on whether you're using the SSC or the SSCR, you added somewhere between 0.2 megabytes to almost 2 megabytes into the FTL, but you saved basically about, it looks like about 8 megabytes,
yeah,
or 7.9 megabytes,
yeah,
in the cache.
Yeah.
So you have a net gain of 5 megabytes, which means that you reduce the overall system memory consumption by 5 megabytes.
Yeah, I think that's the key point, which is, you know, they're talking about a caching system and the overhead of indirection, right? But a similar requirement occurs even with KV stores that use non-sparse or non-hashing based indexing of information. So I feel, or I think that, you know, using a sparse map will actually reduce any kind of overhead requirements on flash. Now, how it would reduce for main memory consumption, I think it would be different than this caching approach, right? Because in the caching solution, they're storing all the indirection in memory. Whereas in a KV store, you wouldn't need to store, cache all that information in memory. Well, maybe they do, but...
So that's a good point. So basically, for us, it's the forward map that is cached in memory, which also helps us caching these the mapping also. So basically, overload it, and that's the similar table that Nisha talked about,
yeah.
Right?
So,
it's exactly applicable here too.
Yeah. So that's kind of, so maybe what we can do is, maybe we can kind of maybe dig up at a high level. Do you remember those overhead, that Sriram computed a while back for KV? I have this somewhere.
Oh, the KV, okay.
You know, where we can, the problem is that we can't compare directly because NVM KV has no version that runs on a block device. So the flash tier guys can compare because we have a cache that runs on a block device. We have a cache that runs on sparse. And they can measure those memory consumptions next to each other. All we have is a KV store that runs on sparse. We don't have an equivalent KV store that runs on block. So maybe we can... So Roger, just to make sure we're on the same page, do you understand, kind of, do you agree that the flash tier is describing a scenario that's conceptually similar to the one we're addressing?
I think so, except that, you know, the reductions that the flash tier talks about is of memory is related to storing the entire indirection map in memory versus not storing the indirection map in memory and replacing that indirection map with this with a hashing based sparse map, right? So in the case of NVM KV, the indirection map is not necessarily stored in memory. It depends, of course, on the implementation of the NVM KV store, right? I don't know what LevelDB does. LevelDB uses the file system, so the file system will do its own caching of all data plus metadata. So it's not clear what whether this is an apples to apples comparison or not.
It is an apples to oranges kind of comparison, to be honest. It's hard to speak to, but I think the reviewer's question is valid. The reviewer's pointing out is, you know, okay, so you remove the whole pile of dirt from the KV store, you shunt some fraction of it under the FTL.
Yeah.
How big is the pile of dirt under the FTL right now? That's what he's asking.
Yeah.
And reviewer 3 also has the same questions too.
Yeah. And, I mean... So the FTL, if we think about the FTL and its additional memory requirement, Swami, this forward map that you are talking about, maybe one such. Does every FTL need to have that, or only a FTL with a sparse map needs to have that?
No, every FTL needs it because it no matter what, it redirects the writes to a different location because flash cannot never write data in place. So
right.
We need to have a mapping layer.
Okay, so that's the FTL mapping layer. So I don't think that is something we are going to... That is an overhead contribution of this sparse map design, right? So...
No. Basically, so one small thing. So now continue the same line of thought. So if you think about it, if you don't have a sparse map, if you have a... Let's say a simple thing. If you have a dense map, you only need the number of bits in the logical address space remains is only as much as the unaddressable capacity.
Yeah.
So, but if you provide a sparse map that is four times more than the addressable capacity, it means you're going to add 2 bits.
Yeah, but how does that translate to extra flash space requirement? Is there a direct mapping of...
So you have to persist this mapping also onto the flash in order to for correct recovery. So these 2 extra bits also translates to 2 extra bits in the flash if you want to recover things properly. That's how I would put it.
Yeah, agreed with Swami. So to very first order, think of it this way. If you have all STLs need maps, so map exists regardless of whether you do this or not. It's only a question of whether the map with this incremental added functionality, how much incremental cost does it have?
Yes.
And say that in memory, the incremental cost is 20% or something like that.
Yes.
In that case, it's safe to assume the incremental cost on flash is 20% because if the map took up 20% more space in DRAM, it's probably going to take that much space to, like, say, checkpoint it, store it, however you choose to persist it, right? And so if the map was, say a 1 terabyte flash device hypothetically had a 1 gigabyte size map, then even without doing any of these FTL changes, you'd be looking at 1 gigabyte of memory consumption and 1 gigabyte of flash consumption to persist the map.
Yes.
Then if you went from there to sparse, then you would be looking at 1.2 gigabytes of memory consumption and probably 1.2 gigabytes of flash consumption.
Yes.
So it's that incremental kind of overhead. And
yes.
And so what the flash tier paper is pointing out is that we need to figure out what the difference is between the design they call SSC and the design they call SSC-R. But in each of those designs, what they're pointing out is that they incurred more memory consumption relative to the vanilla, which was the SSC. And that memory consumption was anywhere from, like, you know, 0.2 megabytes to about 2 megabytes. And what that does, however, is creates an extended data structure that removes about 7.9 megabytes from the usage app. So the savings is, you know, 7.9 megabytes. The cost is anywhere from 0.2 to 2 megabytes in DRAM. And it's safe to assume that same cost is going to be incurred in flash as well.
SSCR uses some merge policy, garbage collection policy, along with some reserving some memory capacity for a fraction at the page level. So it's a variant of the SSC with this small minor modification. That's what they call SSCR.
Sorry, what now? Do it again?
SSCR basically uses the merge policy. They have a better merge policy to improve the usage of the data onto the flash. In addition to it, they also reserve some memory capacity for the maximum fraction in the page level. That's what they say. We need to find out what that means, but it looks like some extra reservation plus some garbage collection policy form. It's a variant that actually makes this easier.
Okay, so I guess the point I think is probably that it, you know, the depending on how the sparse map is designed and what you do with it, it could be a range of overhead, but when you consider the elimination of the memory in the user space application, that elimination is usually greater than the additional memory consumed in the FTL, even at the high end of the range.
Yeah. So the way to think about it, like I said, right? So the same example that we've been talking about, just to increase the sparseness of the device, let's say 4 times is just 2 bits. But if you want to implement the same cache at the application level, you have to double the memory. Because that's the big difference that you're going to build, that you're going to get. That's an easy way to argue about it or talk about it.
Yeah. No, I actually agree. So think of it, so the high-level intuitive point is the overhead of creating a data structure that does mapping is already present in every FTL. So making the mapping sparse usually only involves increasing the fields in that data structure and things like that. Whereas constructing a data structure from nothing is a pretty heavy overhead. So what we've done is we've made the data structure in the FTL a little bit more heavy, a little bit more more elaborate, but we've removed an entire data structure
yep.
from the application. And
yep.
so that's where the game usually comes from.
Makes sense.
That makes sense?
Yep.
And, and I think we may want to actually make that point sort of in writing, which is, you know, that that's the, in some ways, that's the intuition of the win, regardless
yep.
of the number.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
Yeah, and then you can point, I guess you can point to the Flash Tier paper as one example of what you're saying.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That should be enough, because the intuition is clear, and if you can point to an example, then it becomes real.
Yeah. And in terms of the complexity of creating the sparse map, again, you can refer to the Flash Tier work, right?
Yes. Because the Flash Tier work not only shows, you know, illustrates it, they actually use Google sparse map, so that makes it, you know, extremely clear how one can create one of those.
Yeah.
So.
All right. So, okay. Let's see. I'm trying to look at my reminders. You don't miss anything. I don't know. Do you guys get to see the reminders that I created? It's just in bold.
Yeah.
If you grep,
upload them in the discussion section.
If you grep for reminder.
So I'm going to try to I went through the first three sections. And I'm going to try to do a pass over the last few sections, and then after that I'll hand it back to Swami. And Swami, why don't you, kind of sanity check and make sure I do it. By the way, I also noticed the paper hasn't yet had a spell check done on it.
Yeah, not yet.
So we have a couple of things. So I'm going to go over section 3, 4, and 5, and then I should be done with my class.
Yeah. And I think we already have agreement on how to replace the ACID compliance language, right?
Oh, we did. Okay, I missed that. I've been replacing it as I went along. What do we agree on?
It's that we're going to say it's atomic and durable put operations.
Okay, I'm with you.
Consistency is what. What consistency are we talking about? We are probably talking about metadata consistency, which the NVMKV should provide. But is there any other form of consistency we should be talking about here? And the only other remaining one is isolation, which I think we agree that the FTL does not provide isolation. So we can...
One second, Raj, sorry for did we actually end up implementing conditional things?
So, NVMKV, no, we did not.
Okay,
we did not.
So we don't provide isolation.
I think here's the thing. Atomics is isolated. Even though we didn't provide the conditions, here's the thing. The safest thing to do is to not claim that.
Yeah.
How about that? You know,
yeah.
I agree with Roger. The safest claims we can make are the atomic and the durable. Let
yeah.
us not, because the other thing is also keep in mind that I think consistency, I'm not even sure I understand what consistency means in the context of a KV store, much less whether we provide it. Isolation, I guess. Isolation means if I try to do two puts at the same time, I'm going to end up with presumably one of them.
Yeah.
But what does consistency mean in the light of a KV store?
It depends on the context of a KV store. It could mean that some of the combination of two values doesn't.
So, sorry, I don't mean to drag this, but I just want to clarify. If we take the example of file systems and what consistency means for file systems, there are two types of consistency, right? Metadata consistency, which is to say that internal metadata, different types of internal metadata are consistent with each other. And the other is data consistency, which means that your file does not have corrupt data in it. So these are the two notions of consistency we can potentially talk about for a file system. And we can, you know, think about whether similar consistency properties can be reasoned about for KV store.
Yeah. If so, KV store definitely provides metadata consistency.
Right.
It guarantees that no matter what happens, if it comes back after a crash, it will, metadata will be consistent. It lays a return a full key or no key.
Right.
The last update basically. That it definitely guarantees it. In terms of data consistency, again, since atomic update, it still provides data consistency guarantees for updates in general, but I think that's what file system provides too. So we provide the same guarantees as the file system in terms of consistency.
Yeah, so the reason data consistency is looked at separately in the file system case is because data is separate from metadata. And in NVMKV, if we basically combine everything into one atomic write, then data consistency you can think of as being provided automatically if it is, if the data or value that we are trying to write is within a single block, right? So,
blurry like a block, right?
Could you repeat that, Leo?
I think even if the key value pair is larger than one block, it's still consistent because it's a transaction in a log.
Yeah.
It is a transaction in a log. Hold on.
Right here.
Oh, you mean inside the FTL layer?
Yes.
Okay. I see. So every put is atomic. So, I mean, if every put is atomic, and the put operation translates into an atomic write of the data and the metadata, then yeah, you do have data consistency, I guess. It's a little bit of a complicated discussion, though, and I mean, I don't. It's a little tricky because we are saying that we. I think it's safe to say that we provide atomicity and durability, but in because consistency and isolation is absent from that discussion, some might construe that we do not provide consistency and isolation.
Yeah.
So I
agree.
Think, yeah, I'm still not understanding how we can provide consistency.
Data consistency.
Oh, minute? Yeah, but that would.
But the discussion that we are having earlier was file systems, if you think about it, they provide consistency both the metadata and data.
Okay.
And their metadata consistency guarantees that when it comes back, the metadata is consistent, there's no dangling pointers and stuff.
Oh, okay, so this is fair. So what you're saying is it's not that the KV store offers a consistency service, it's
yes.
that the KV store is internally consistent.
Yes.
In which case, I think we are internally consistent.
Yeah.
And probably also isolated. No,
not isolated. Only if you do conditional things that are isolated, right?
No.
Most people can write to the same thing.
No, but see, it is, our atomic have a lock in front of them. So. Well, but.
Right.
I don't know what you mean by isolated. Like, for example, if I say two, to me, isolated means two foot are not going to intermingle with each other.
Right. Yeah, that's what isolated means to me too. That when two processes are writing to the same file, you don't get a garbled mix of the data.
We actually have a lock at the KV layer, right?
Yeah, we have a lock at KV layer.
The late lock.
Yeah.
Okay, so in that case, you've got isolation, yes.
So I think we are.
Acid.
So maybe the correct thing to say here is we are in fact acid compliant, but some of that is not because the FTL is providing it. It's because we use a combination of FTL atomics and, you know, KV store level locking and other logic to achieve acid compliance.
And acid is not our database acid, it's a different acid. Think about it.
Okay. This is a lot though, so for a reader in a 5-page paper.
We can
find acid. That's not good.
Yeah.
I guess I'm wondering if how much honesty do we lose if we just give up the acid thing and stick to atomic and durable because even if we are actually asset compliant, trying to explain that in the context of this 5-page document, it's...
Yeah, it's a challenge. It is a challenge.
So can't you say that in the interest of space, you're not talking about it, but we are asset compliant?
It's a slippery slope.
We're not going to tell you how, but we are asset compliant.
Wait for the big picture.
Well, all joking aside, well, no, the problem is it's not traditionally appropriate for hot storage tables to reference their future long version.
No, I'm just saying that they should wait for it. It's not like we will say, wait for it. We should never go ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, that's
it's just that in the interest of space, we can't talk about it, but we are asset compliant. Because the point is, it's a 5-page paper. You can't talk about anything and everything. So
what if we were to say, like, okay, what if we would have a paragraph in the discussion that actually hit both of these? So the first one being the sparse business.
Correct.
And say, look, in the interest of time, there's two things we can't cover in depth.
Okay.
One of them is the overhead of sparse, but note that here's the logic, like the intuition. And an example of this intuition playing out in another use case is in the flash tier. Two sentences, we've covered that.
Yeah.
And the intuition is in this paper, in our paper, so that people don't feel cheated. So the second one is to say that, you know, we achieve asset compliance through a combination of reliance on the atomic primitive in the device plus blocking within the KV store. And just leave it at that. Is that fair?
It's fair, but we don't have space even for those things. We have to cut a lot of other things too. We don't even have acknowledgement, just to let you know. And even add that.
Well, here's the thing, I mean, if we
can cut some of the things, if we exist that we have, in addition for adding more contents to it. I am in favor of cutting something to add something. I don't want to just add something onto it because we have to cut some. We don't have space for it.
Well, you guys do know that, okay.
Let me just read this reviewer comment. That might put the acid discussion in context. So the reviewer states here, and it's just one reviewer, there's another reviewer which says other things. The paper repeatedly says that it provides acid-compatible semantics, but this isn't a well-defined term. Please specify what the transactional semantics are. Presumably, this includes crash recoverability of updates. Does it include multi-key atomic transactions? I'm guessing it doesn't include isolation, that is concurrency control. So this is the kind of questions that people want to ask when we talk about ACID compliance. Let me see what the other guy says. And I agree with Nisha. I think what you said earlier is probably good enough. And we can say that, you know, we provide ACID compliance without having to specify, you know, all of those properties, and we say that we do not have space to discuss this any further. I think it's good enough.
Okay, so what if we do this? What if we? Okay, so give me a chance to take a pass. I'll try to add that sentence, and I'll try to remove. It sounded like we were talking about adding about four sentences.
Yeah.
Let me try to remove four sentences worth of content from elsewhere in the paper and see if I can get it. And then we'll make one last attempt, you know, and Swami can work his magic with, you know, to try to get it all to fit. So,
yeah, I agree. I think that's the right way to do it. Or at least one reasonable.
I guess at this point, there is no reference that we can remove, right?
No, we can.
That was the other thing. We just can get rid of like three references.
We can remove references. 33 for a hot stone paper is
a lot. It is a
really wow.
Yeah.
People write actually
40,
30 to 40 for a full paper.
Yeah. Let us try not to remove any references on the program committee members.
Okay, so why don't we do this? I'm sorry, I'm late for my next meeting.
Yeah.
But let's do this, guys. So let me try to do a pass. And I'll send something to Swami tonight and copy you guys. And Swami, why don't you, and I'll do my best
Okay.
To reclaim the space I'm going to consume.
Okay.
And then
we'll do another.
After that, we'll do another pass, and then this is due tomorrow, right?
Thursday, basically.
Tomorrow is
7. Tomorrow is Wednesday.
I understand tomorrow is Wednesday, but
oh,
it's the 7th.
Oh, so my date was wrong. Okay. Yeah,
is
tomorrow.
It actually due tomorrow the 7th or Thursday the 8th?
It's by 8th, it's Thursday night.
Okay, so it's due tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Which means, okay, so I'll get my draft into Swami by tonight. Swami, that will give you all day tomorrow to do what I'm hoping is only adjusting things.
Yep, I'll do it very early so I can give it to Raju one more time, that if he can take another pass, that'll be awesome.
Right. Yep, yeah, I'll do it. Yep.
I'll try to do it as soon as possible and give it to you so that, yeah.
Yeah, I like it. Let's do that.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. And Swami, you are new on this one, too.
Yeah.
Swami, quick reminder before you leave. You said you were going to look into the right parameters to, from FireKV, Fire properly.
Yeah, I'll send it to you. Absolutely.
Sounds good. Thank you, guys.
Leo, can you hang on for a second? Let me talk to you. For,
Yeah.
I want to close this thing. Once you go out, I'll actually close the WebEx. You can continue talking on the phone.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Sonny.